still ahead, pity me.
WMFO Medford, and welcome to the Voicemobile. Good afternoon, all. And in case you haven't been out, it got a lot cooler and there's quite a breeze. So if you're not prepared for it, it is a bit of a shock. May 4th, I'm telling you, this is a cool spring. The flowers and the flowering trees are happy, but I think next week we're going to get into the 70s, maybe 60s over the weekend. And I'm ready for a little bit warmer weather. Still have the heat on. So I just have a brochure here of the Somerville Open Studios, which started already, and it goes... Oh, excuse de moi, this is already over. Okay, sorry about that. Oh, I see somebody left something here in the studio. Oh dear, that's not good. All their IDs and stuff, they'll be looking for that. Well, we'll have to see if it says who it belongs to. Well, I'll have to look at that later. Okay, so we'll start us off with some new music from a group that is local but has played a lot of different places. Well, the election stuff, I don't know where you stand with all of it. I'm sick of it myself. But I guess we'll get what we get. Okay, well, here we go. This is the Voicemobile. I'm your host, Joyce, the voice here at Tufts, WMFO at Tufts.
mainu yoinu.
Thank you.
So it's WMFO here at Medford, and we've been listening to a series of wonderful things. That was Professor Cunningham and his Old School, and the disc is called The Rhythm Method, and the song is called Black Coffee. This is one of the newer things that I have in my collection. Let me just... take a look and see what notes I have about that. It's a great, it's got a metronome, on the cover. Very beautiful, old-fashioned wooden and metal metronome. So it says the Rhythm Method, it's a second album from this New York City-based swing group. Latest release features a big horn sound and also features some bluesy original tunes. And as a result of the relationship that has developed between the band and the swing dance community of New York City. Okay, so Adrian Cunningham on vocals, tenor, and soprano saxophone, clarinet, and flute. New York-based musician, originally hailing from Australia, is one of his home country's best jazz exports, having performed locally with artists as diverse as Marcia Hines, Australian Idol Band, James Morrison, and Galapagos Duck, as well as his own quartet. There's lots of information here, but thanks to the folks at Kate Smith Promotions of Chicago for letting me have this lovely CD. Okay, so before that, we heard George Bernard Dudley Kenyatta, and the song is called Harold's Tune. It's off of a disc called Joy, and Love, Apa Kenyatta, on Life Force Jazz. That is the label. And let's see what information I have about that. This is also fairly new to my collection. Let's see. Oh, I thought I had his information handy. Maybe I don't. Okay, so it looks like it's not. But there are some liner notes. It says it's unclear whether Mr. Kenyatta has made music the center of his spiritual life or spirituality the center of his musical life. So it's clear that he's fused both into this album. And It gives a hint. The album name, Apa Kenyatta, Joy and Love, gives a hint to the cultural mix that has influenced this body of work. Apa is a South Indian name that means father, and Kenyatta is an East African name meaning musician. Though these cultures are very different, different music, it is said, is a common thread through all cultures. That is, music is a common thread, simple and complex, exquisite and vague. Mr. Kenyatta does a fine job of blending his many influences into this beautiful collection of original songs. Okay. And before that, I think the first time we're hearing this is tenor saxophonist Noah Preminger explores, where is it? The Delta Blues. Now, what did I just do with that? Ah, there it is. Dark was the night, cold was the ground. And this is not coming out actually until May 6th, so you're hearing it first here on the Voice Mobile and WMFO. It features the return of Preminger's Kindred Quartet with Jason Palmer, Kim Cass, and Ian Froman. Mr. Preminger designs a different kind of sound for each note, an individual destiny and story. That's a quote by Ben Ratliff of the New York Times. And there are CD release concerts May 12th at Scholars in Boston and May 17th at the Jazz Standard in New York City. Pain, Sorrow, Struggle, Resilience, Fortitude and Truth, deeply profound emotions and experiences from the core of the Delta Blues. The raw, unvarnished songs of that region struck a powerful nerve with saxophonist Noah Preminger, who connects with their captivating directness and soul-rattling expressiveness on his fifth album, Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground. So he explores nine haunting blues classics from the pre-war Mississippi Delta in stark but vigorous new arrangements. So we'll certainly be hearing more of that. And let's see, before that we heard the Kabbalah Dream Orchestra from a CD called Ancient of Days, on the Yisod label, and the song is called Children of the Palace. And before that, Naftuli's Dream opened up the set. Sitting in some train, watching the Tuscan landscape go speeding forward. That's the title of the song, and the disc is called Blood. Let's see what it says. Blood, like its predecessors, is powered by the unique tuba-driven rhythm section featuring founding members Eric Rosenthal on drums and Jim Gray on tuba and McLaughlin on accordion. New to the mix is Boston-based guitarist Andrew Stern. The melodic duties are shared by Dixon on clarinet and cornetist Gary Bohan, who began touring with Naftali's Dream in the early 2000s, but has not previously recorded with the band. So it's this song sets the tone for a deeply introspective album, which mines the meditative Eastern elements of klezmer music, as well as the more celebrated exuberant energy of klezmer music. It evokes a Romanian-style doina with a soaring melody over hypnotic rhythm, with Rosenthal's cymbal pattern filling in for the insistent cymbalum groove. Well, we'll be hearing more of that. I really enjoyed that. So that's some of the new music. So, as some of you may be aware, tomorrow is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and there are a number of different things going on. I know that there's a program at the Temple Shalom in Medford, although I don't have the details of that at the moment. But also, let's see, I thought I had brought in, good knows where I put it. Let's see. No, I'm not going to find it. And I know I stuck it in my bag somewhere. Information about the program at Temple Shalom, the Tremont Street Shul in Cambridge. One of the longstanding members is going to be speaking, and he was a child. 3 years old, who was swept, taken away to live in Scandinavia, in Holland, I think. And he's going to talk about his experiences. I wish I could find where I put the information, and I'm not finding it. Ah! Well, most annoying. Maybe I'll find it in a little bit, but meanwhile, I do have some music from the Zamir Chorale of Boston. It was from their centenary tour, The Songs Live On. And we're going to listen to something in just a minute. But I wanted to share with you some information from two different books on the Holocaust. One is called The Holocaust, and I got this from the Yad Vashem in Israel, and it has a lot of information, a whole timeline from all what went on. So I'm just going to share a little bit from this book, which has a lot of very graphic pictures. So, no exceptions whatsoever were made in the Nazis' policy of racial discrimination and physical extermination of the Jews. However, local conditions had a marked influence upon both the rate of extermination and the methods used. The readiness or reluctance of the local population to cooperate with the Nazis was a factor of vital importance. I'm going to read that again. The readiness or reluctance of the local population to cooperate with the Nazis was a factor of vital importance. The various conquered peoples were allowed different degrees of self-government. The Poles, for example, had no self-government, while the Danes retained relatively wide powers. Obviously, the attitudes of the people themselves were also an important factor. The Baltic peoples were eager to collaborate in the extermination of the Jews in their countries. For the most part, the Poles remained aloof and indifferent to the course of events. The Bulgarians saved most of their Jews, but the outstanding example of rescuing and helping Jews was shown by the Danes. Satellite states such as Croatia and Slovakia were headed by puppet rulers devoted to the Nazis and their ideology, who were only too ready to fulfill the requests of their overlords. Two main factors influenced the Jews' reaction to the impending extermination. In the first place, during the preceding years, the Nazis had done their utmost to rob the Jews of their physical strength, strip them of their self-respect, paralyze their willpower, break up their organizations, and completely isolate them from the outside worlds. In fact, the systematic humiliation, starvation, disease, and noisome conditions which faced them day in and day out weakened their ability to resist. Nothing mattered save mere existence. Was it possible to cheat death? Could hunger be stilled? The catastrophe which had overtaken Jewry was, so to speak, an amalgam of countless personal tragedies. The murder machine would descend without warning on towns and villages. The action, quote-unquote, would continue for days or weeks, during which the Jewish residents were often in a state of shock. The shock and anguish were so great that there was no possibility of organizing any effective resistance. Another factor was the disbelief shared by most normal human beings. The Nazi pretense and camouflage were successful in deceiving the Jews until the very last moment. Rumors about the death camps were met with skepticism. No one with any common sense would believe such a gruesome possibility. Late in 1942, news of the death camps and the fate of the Jews deported from the ghettos of Poland spread. In view of the conditions under which the Jews were living and the attitude of their non-Jewish neighbors, it is little wonder that in many cases the Jews failed to resist. The main extermination camps were established in Poland, and Jews from all the countries of occupied Europe were sent there to be murdered. Apart from a tiny minority such as, for example, the Council for Age of the Jews, Zagoda, most Poles regarded the extermination of the Jews with total indifference. During 1942, some 70% of the Jews of Poland were annihilated. 70%! And my father comes from Poland, from south of Warsaw. He got out when he was 16. Thank God. Most of the ghettos in the country were liquidated. Of the 3.25 million Jews in Poland, in 1939, almost 3 million were murdered before the war was over. It's hard to fathom.
Oh,
Extremely painful to listen to. It goes on for another 5 minutes. Never Again by John Zorn. The disc is called Kristallnacht. Yes, never again. But unfortunately, so I'm going to share something with you from a book called Desecrators of